You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Happy Wednesday to you. Thank you for being here, with Christina Long on the desk. Arkansas and Oklahoma State, we're getting closer to kickoff over in Stillwater on Saturday, 11 a.m. on ABC. Later on today's show, we're going to have Steve Ditmore with us. He's a professor at the University of North Florida. He's got a lot of expertise on these disputes, carriage disputes between providers and content creators, and we'll get his insight on this Disney DirecTV spat that certainly could affect DirecTV users as they try to watch Razorback games, not only this weekend, but down the road if this dispute goes on any longer. But, you know, first, as we get ready for Arkansas-Oklahoma State this weekend, a thought occurred to me as I was coming in today. When was the last time that you looked forward to an Arkansas football game like this? I don't remember a time last year when there was this much excitement for a Razorback game. I mean, it felt like what happened the first couple of weeks against Western Carolina and Kent State, even though Arkansas won those games, I think people kind of had a feeling of what was going to come. Maybe not a 4-8 season where they only won one SEC game, but that it was going to be a tough season for the Razorback. And so I think like some of the, the balloon kind of got popped a little bit as it relates to excitement early last season. So when was the last time that you looked forward to an Arkansas game like this? I don't know, maybe 2022. They played A&M early that year. You know, they had the A&M people called it the oink doink, where Cam Little kicked it off of the upright down in Arlington. And since then, there really just hasn't been a whole lot of momentum for Arkansas football. There were, you know, there were some wins in there, but more, you know, a lot of losses too since that point in Arlington. It feels like Arkansas's biggest game in probably a couple of years. I think back to maybe Cincinnati 2 years ago. There was a lot of excitement for that game because it was a season opener. It just feels to me, Christina, like this could be, if Arkansas can go over there and win on Saturday, and I think they got a chance to do it. They're an 8.5-point favorite. ESPN's FPI, the Football Predictor Index, gives Arkansas about a 45-46% chance to win this game, which is really high for a team going on the road, especially against a ranked team. If they go over there and win, this could be as big of a win, I think, for Arkansas since maybe Sam Pittman's second year when they beat Texas early and they beat Texas A&M early and kind of reestablished themselves as being back, at least to the point that they're not going to be a pushover anymore. They're going to give you a fight. They had a bad year last year. They think they've got some things figured out with their personnel, with their coordinator, obviously. If they can win on Saturday, it feels like it could be a big moment for the program.
Yeah, it's such a big game in terms of narrative setting for the rest of the season, because when you have a game like this that's this early, if you win, it sets, you know, everybody's in a good mood for at least till the next game. But then mm-hmm. you've got UAB, which is a game you expect to win. You know, it helps kind of keep some good, you know, generate some good vibes that can last for a little while. And it gives so much optimism for the rest of the season. Like, that would change some of the perception of this team. If you lose and you lose badly, it does the opposite. It sucks the wind out of any progress you made from winning 70-0 in week one. And it really just kills the energy that you spent the offseason trying to build. And I don't think that they have to lose badly if they lose. I think this should, you know, I think we're all expecting a close game here. So I think a loss would be a very big disappointment, even if it is competitive. It's obviously disappointing because I think we'll learn a lot about this team from this game. I think we'll learn a lot on both sides of the ball. I think both teams have a lot riding on this game on both sides of the ball. This is for both of them. Even though Oklahoma State played South Dakota State, a good FCS opponent, in week one, this is the first major test for either of these teams on their schedule. And Arkansas is the first real threat to Oklahoma State's lofty goals for this season. So it's just for on both sides. When it's hard to remember an Arkansas game to me that had this high of stakes for both sides because you have it so early in the season.
It's the first time Arkansas is going to go on the road and play a non-conference game against a team that's ranked in the AP poll in 8 years. The TCU game down in Fort Worth was the last time that happened. In 2016, Oklahoma State ranked 16th this week. TCU was ranked 16th. Oklahoma State's a Big 12 team. TCU is a Big 12 team. See where I'm going here? Arkansas won that game. Maybe they win this week. But Oklahoma State up a spot in the AP poll this week They're number 16. Arkansas actually got 2 points in the AP poll. The way points work is that, let's say you're number one on a ballot, you get 25 points. Or if you're number 25, you get 1 point. So Arkansas got 2 points in this AP poll this week, and they both came from the same voter. Andy Yamashita covers college football for the Seattle Times and ranked Arkansas number 24 this week. So he will be on Goat Watch this week. Either he knows what he's talking about, or
I know Andy a little bit. Person. I haven't texted him about his vote or anything, but I think he covers Washington.
There's just not a lot of big games this week in college football. The big game, and I think game day is going to be there on Saturday, is in Ann Arbor, where Texas goes to Michigan, and that's the big game. It's the Fox 11 a.m. kickoff, or noon Eastern. They call it the Big Noon kickoff on Fox, which has been a huge deal for them just in terms of ratings. And that game is going to get the ratings on Saturday. There's no doubt about it. You get a big fan base like Texas. You get a big fan base like Michigan. Both teams in the top 10. One's a national champion from last year. One thinks they could win a national championship this year. That's a huge game. But outside of that, Christina, you've got Tennessee, North Carolina State. They're playing in Charlotte at the Carolina Panthers Stadium. But what else is bigger than Arkansas, Oklahoma State? I mean, there's just not a lot of – it's, again, one of those weeks where there's just not a lot of power teams playing power teams, and especially power teams playing power conference teams who are ranked. You know, I've got, after Arkansas, Oklahoma State, you got Baylor and Utah. That's a Big 12 game now. That's kind of hard to wrap your mind around. Iowa's at Iowa State. That's always a fun game, but I don't know how much of an appeal that has on a national level. Not that Arkansas, Oklahoma State has a whole lot. And you get Boise State and Oregon. It's really not an attractive week for college football. And so Arkansas, Oklahoma State, given the fact that one's an SEC team, one's in the top 25, I think there'll be some eyeballs in this game.
Yeah, and the other thing is, with some of those other power games, as you say, it is, I don't expect either of those to be that competitive. Like, I think this, as far as, you know, the ones you mentioned with Texas and Michigan and NC State, Tennessee, I don't think Michigan is going to put up that big of a fight with Texas.
No, I don't either.
So I think that one will be over early. And then Tennessee, NC State, I don't have a ton of belief in NC State either. So I just think, this, as far as like a competitive, fun game, I think Arkansas, Oklahoma State has the opportunity to be a really exciting one that people talk about all day.
I'm going to be interesting to see what the ratings are this weekend, because, you know, you've got this DirecTV Disney thing that I think could affect stuff. DirecTV's got 11 million subscribers, so whether or not you agree with satellites or not, you have to at least acknowledge the fact that, you know, that is a large number of people that could potentially watch games this weekend, and a lot of them aren't going to get ESPN networks, but they are going to get ABC in most markets. And so I wondered, you know, does Arkansas, Oklahoma State, do they get maybe a little bit of a ratings bump versus what they would have gotten? That's just kind of an interesting little wrinkle to the weekend. Yeah, but back to Arkansas, it just feels good that there is excitement for a game, because, you know, so much of the last season and to season and a half has just been filled with doom and gloom about this football team. There just hasn't been a lot of to get excited about. And maybe there's not going to be a whole lot to get excited about this year either. But we don't know yet. The UAPB game, I felt like there was no cause for concern coming out of that game. You had to like Taylen Green's play, I think. You know, he was efficient, missed a couple of passes, but, you know, nobody's perfect. I thought he played a pretty good game, ran the ball well, threw the ball pretty well, had a couple of touchdown passes. Run game did what it should against that type of opponent, against UAPB. Offense scored every time it had the ball. The defense held UAPB out of the end zone. It was as close to a perfect game, I think, as Arkansas could have played in week one. Sam Pittman said they didn't have a whole lot of missed assignments. You know, and week one is obviously a time when games are, you know, a lot of times they're sloppy. I mean, you just don't get a whole lot of crisp, clean games in game one. And I know that the talent disparity on the field was great, really great. Those two teams should not have been on the same field with each other. But so much of when you're playing a team like that, the emphasis has to be more introspective and about, am I missing assignments? Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? And it feels like, in listening to the coaches this week and the players, and then obviously what your eyes told you last Thursday, Christina, is that, again, it was about as close to perfect as they probably could have gotten, and that's a good sign for week one.
Yeah, and I mean, after the game, when we talked to Sam Pittman, one of the concerns he brought up was like, oh, yeah, we had, like, too many penalties, but that feels like a very week one, just kind of everybody kind of figuring it out sort of thing. Nothing that was crazy. You know, Isaiah Satania probably could have had a lot more yards and another touchdown and everything. So, you know, if not for penalties. So that's one thing, but that feels like a week one sort of fluky type of thing. And then he mentioned feeling like they needed to tackle better and that that's something that they're working on a lot as mm-hmm. they prepare to face Ollie Gordon at Oklahoma State. And so, but also, you know, their tackling grade, like when you look at Pro Football Focus, like their tackling grade wasn't great, but also didn't matter. They didn't give up any points. So, you know, every team will see a couple of red flags, but some teams have certainly seen more than others in the first week. And Arkansas really didn't have very many as far as their own internal, like you said, looking at your own side.
We had Pat Jones on the show yesterday, the former Oklahoma State head coach. This is what he had to say about the matchup.
I heard Mike Gundy do a presser here earlier. And I think Mike's got it pegged to, you know, a bit. I think it'll be Oklahoma State speed and quickness against Arkansas has got a little bit more brute force, probably. A little bit bigger. Oklahoma State's quicker and faster. You know, it will be interesting. I was curious to watch. And obviously, I used to know those guys at UAPB. And, you know, they're not very good, bless their heart, right now. But, you know, the guy, I was really interested to see Taylen Green, you know, the quarterback from Boise. He's an impressive young man. I mean, even though, obviously, they had UAPB outmanned, I was curious to see, being a tall guy, whether he was just a long strider or how much foot quickness he had and how much arm talent he had and his body language, which I thought was all really, really good. Petrino will certainly do a great job with him. But this kid looks like to me that if he's right, he could take over a game. You know, now what he does against the Oklahoma State defense, I don't know. But that was, to me, the most impressive thing about watching Arkansas play was Talon Green. You know, the Jackson, the back, looks like a good player. Hard to really tell on the offensive line. Is, you know, they're big and strong. Defensively, you know, it's got some guys that can rush the passer and all this. But, again, Oklahoma State's got Ollie Gordon and Bowman, the quarterback's been around forever. He's about 25 years old, I think, and really played well. And the thing about Oklahoma State that has gotten somewhat overlooked that is really impressive and showed up the other day is their receiver core. You know, they've got three or four receivers that can get it pretty good. Brandon Presley's a kick returner, smaller guy, but, you know, they try to give the ball a bunch on bubble screens and stuff, and they got a kid named Stripling that transferred from Washington State a year ago that had gotten off to a good start and then broke a wrist. He came back and showed up big the other day, and Rashad Owens has been around for a while and is a good player, and had a kid transfer from OU that's helping the receiver core. So between Bowman, the quarterback, and the Oklahoma State receiver core, and Ollie Gordon, the running back, it's in a veteran crew of offensive linemen. It's a pretty salted group offensively.
That was Pat Jones, the former Oklahoma State head coach, who now hosts the Pat Jones Show over in Tulsa and Oklahoma City. And he mentioned this, quickness of Oklahoma State against brute force of Arkansas. Arkansas was not a very brute force team last year. They couldn't impose their will on the line. It feels like this game is going to be a test, Christina, of whether or not Arkansas can get its physicality back. That was one of the things that was a big point of emphasis throughout the offseason was, can we be physical up front, not just on the offensive line, but on the defensive line too? Oklahoma State, they've got a great offensive front. We think they've got a pretty good defensive front. So they've got some good-looking players on the line. It's not what Arkansas is going to see in the SEC, but it's going to be an early test of, hey, can you push these guys off the line of scrimmage? Because if you can't push Oklahoma State off the line of scrimmage, then chances are you're probably going to struggle with the better lines that you're going to see down the road in SEC play.
Yeah, and both coaches talked about that in their Monday availabilities as they look ahead to this game, was this is going to be an in-the-trenches kind of game. This is where that's going to be decided, and both of these coaches know it. Sam Pittman threw out the word slobber knocker, which really made my day. You know, so they're ready for that kind of physical matchup. And Mike Gundy talked about how he wasn't thrilled with the way, you know, they ran the ball successfully against South Dakota State, but they averaged like 3.3 yards per carry, and he wants them to average about a yard more than that. And he talked about how, you know, South Dakota State had a good defensive line, but also Arkansas is going to be a lot bigger, and you're going to have so much more push against them. And he talked about that. He talked about, I think he said they have more girth, was the word Gundy chose. Really just some great word choice by both coaches on Monday. But I think, you know, so he talked a little bit about how they are going to have to prove some physicality against Arkansas to be able to run the ball the way they want to on Saturday.
You ever watch The Waterboy?
I have actually never seen it.
Oh,
I haven't seen. This is the worst thing about me. I actually have not seen like most sports movies.
You are the worst, because I don't mean that in a bad way. But we have these conversations during baseball games about movies and music, and you never know.
It's so bad. I've never seen like A League of Their Own, which is the movie all like sports girls have
so
seen.
Bad.
You know, it's terrible. So yeah, it's bad. So no, I have not seen The Waterboy.
Well, I think about that scene in The Waterboy. You know, where they win and. And Bobby Boucher tells his coach, "You got your manhood back." Yeah, so you got your manhood back. That's what Arkansas is going to try to do against Oklahoma State this week, and they're going to try to get their manhood back after they lost it.
They just
last
need
year.
Adam Sandler in their ear, like yelling about it.
Phil Steele had some thoughts on Oklahoma State when he had where we had him on our show a couple of weeks ago. This is what he had to say about the Cowboys.
This year they have got 19 returning starters, 10 on offense, 9 on defense. They go from number 115 in my experience chart all the way up to number 1.
Oh, wow.
And last year they got a lot better after about 4 or 5 games. I thought the Kansas State game was really the turning point of their season. They were 2-2. They had a blowout loss to South Alabama. Then all of a sudden they turned it on and got all the way to the Big 12 title game. They've got Ollie Gordon in the backfield. Bowman, I think, will be better this year. Last year was, let's face it, an average quarterback. He had 15 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, but it's his second full year as a starter. They've got a veteran offensive line, and almost the entire defense is back. They're also an extremely tough team at home. You know, they've only lost 3 home games the last 4 years. It gets very loud there, so that's going to be an extremely difficult test for Arkansas. But go back to what I said at the start, is Arkansas doesn't blink when it comes to these big games. You go into LSU last year, number 12 in the country, could have beat them, only lost by 3. Go and face the number 16 team in the country, Ole Miss. They were on a roll, only lose by 7. And even Alabama, they only lose by 3. They were, of course, a team that won the SEC last year. So I like the fact that Sam Pittman's boys can go in and play against a team that may be better, may have more talent, even in a hostile environment, and play extremely well.
So that was Phil Steele on our show talking about Oklahoma State. Talking about they're the most experienced team in college football this year, at least in terms of age, and that is certainly the case on the offensive line. There's been a lot of talk about that. They got a 7th-year quarterback in Bowman. He mentioned how Arkansas played last year on the road, and I don't think you can listen to that without also acknowledging what we've said in the past, that that was a different team. We haven't seen how this Arkansas team is going to handle the road. But for the most part, Sam Pittman's teams, I think they have played pretty well in road games. They don't win them all, but you know, they have been a tough out more often than not in road games. Just last year, their only SEC win was at Florida. They were close at LSU. They were close at Alabama and Ole Miss. As Phil Steele pointed out, and again, that was a different team. But throughout Pittman's last, you know, 3 years up to this one, they have been tough in road games for the most part. They won at BYU. They won at LSU. They won at Auburn. Should have won at Auburn twice. They got hosed in 2020. They've won some other road games. He is 23-13-1 against the spread, Pittman is. That's the best against the spread record or percentage by any SEC head coaches. And a lot of those against the spread, you know, victories have been in road games. And so I think Arkansas is going to go over there and they're going to be ready. Can they win or not? I don't know, but I think they'll be ready.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, this is going to be when we're going to start to see some of this team's identity, as far as some teams play really well on the road. Some teams don't. I think some coaches perform better on the road. Like you said, Sam Pittman's had some success, but it really does depend on, you know, each team. This team has 55 newcomers. You know, how are they going to do on the road when they put all those guys together? How is Taylen Green going to perform on the road? You know, I think last week was so big for him as far as his confidence, but how does that carry over into an environment like Oklahoma State?
I wanted to touch on one other thing real quick. This has nothing to do with the Razorbacks or the SEC. Did you see the Arkansas State UCA ending?
I saw it after the fact, yes. And then I saw all of the everybody coming back and saying, yeah, that was really bad, and we messed up really bad.
Well, and so Arkansas State wins on a touchdown catch with 3 seconds to play over in Jonesboro last weekend. The Sun Belt Conference came out yesterday and said that, quote, upon review of the complete pass call with 3 seconds remaining, the Sun Belt Conference has announced an incorrect application of the replay review process. They said the replay official was, quote, focused on the firm control and body part down aspects of the act of a catch and did not evaluate the surviving the ground aspect of a catch during the review of the play. It says they had an end zone camera that showed the receiver didn't survive the ground, but that camera angle was not consulted by the replay official. The replay ruling should have confirmed the on-field call of an incomplete pass, and Arkansas State shouldn't have scored. Now, this does not guarantee that UCA wins the game. There were going to be 3 seconds left on the clock. Arkansas State had the ball, I think, inside the red zone, maybe inside the 10-yard line. But, man, does this make UCA feel any better? Are they supposed to feel any better that the Sun Belt Conference says that, hey, you know, we screwed up?
I feel like it's almost worse. Like, I would feel worse just knowing, like, that it was truly just a mistake. There's, like, no argument. They've admitted that it was messed up, and there's nothing you can do about it.
I guess give the Sun Belt a little bit of credit for coming back and owning up to the mistake. But is this not why we have replay in the first place?
Yeah.
I mean, the games are long enough already that who cares if the replay official takes another 2 minutes to consult a different camera angle?
When it's literally the result of the game, you should take all the time you need.
On any score, especially on any score, you should be consulting every tool in the tool belt.
I didn't know that they would just not look at a certain angle. I don't understand why you wouldn't look at all of the available angles.
The replay stuff, it really bothers me. The fact that if we have replay and we're going to spend so much time on replay during the games and make these games 3.5, 4 hours long, in large part due to replays, why not get the game right? I mean, this happened to Arkansas against Auburn 4 years ago. The SEC came back and they said that, they said Arkansas, Auburn threw a backward pass, but, quote, the Razorbacks did not recover it quick enough. So you're saying that you blew it on the field, but some sort of technicality kind of gives you some wiggle room.
And this is just straight up, yeah, no, the person that did it wrong.
There is so much energy and money and time put into winning the game that if you've got replay, get it right in the moment. Doesn't matter if it takes you 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15. We waited 17 minutes for Florida State and Georgia Tech to end after the 2-minute warning the other day. So get it right on the field. If you're going to have replay, then have replay. This is very frustrating. I think it should be frustrating for not just the fans of UCA. It should be frustrating for fans of college football that you can have replay available and still not get the games right.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. It really doesn't. Like you said, why have it if it's not going to get used?
All right, we'll be back more. Hey, want to tell you real quick before we step out that the Hog Sports Network has a tent today. We're proud to be supporting the Sharing and Caring of Benton County Golf Tournament. It's up at Kingswood Golf Course in Bella Vista. If you're in the neighborhood, stop by today on Wednesday and see Brent Powers or Don Jones. They're next to the Kendall King tents on hole number 4, and you can learn what our Hog Sports Network is all about. It's happening all day today up at the Kingswood Golf Course in Bella Vista. Hope you'll stop by there. When we come back, we'll have Q&A. We've had some questions submitted to us, and we'll have our answers on that. More in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors.
LPGA Week in Northwest Arkansas returns September 23rd through the 29th for the 18th consecutive year. Watch former Razorbacks and 2024 Olympians Maria Fassi and Gabby Lopez compete against the world's best female golfers at the Walmart Northwest Arkansas Championship, presented by P&G at Pinnacle Country Club in Rogers. The NWA Championship is so much more than a golf tournament, with something for everyone to enjoy and activities for fans of all ages. Daily tickets are only $10, and kids 17 and under get in free with a ticketed adult. Get your tickets today at nwachampionship.com.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over 4 decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. We'll have Steve Dittmore with us a little bit later to talk about this DirecTV Disney streaming tiff that's going on right now. We'll tell you about Whole Hog Sports. You can get the latest breaking news on all of the Razorback sports at wholehogsports.com. Most in-depth stories for all Arkansas sports, analysis, latest in recruiting, unique stories on all the Arkansas teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. We're deep into the season already for some different Razorback seasons. Obviously, football season's under the way. The Arkansas soccer team, Anthony Christensen wrote about this yesterday, ranked number 6 in this week's poll. Volleyball's got a big weekend coming up at Barnhill Arena. Baseball, Dave Van Horn had a news conference yesterday. Lots of different content that you can find on our website. So what we're going to do now is that Christina Long, who's she and Ethan Westerman, they ask for questions, basically like a mailbag. And so we're going to do a little bit of a Q&A here, and Blake Sutton, our producer, is going to read those questions to us. Blake, fire away with number one.
Question number one from Scavenger Hog. How big of a factor do you think having to play Oklahoma State and Stillwater on the road might be versus playing at home? On some occasions when on the road, I've sensed the team having more focus, which is a little strange.
Yeah, what I said when we wrote about this and answered this question online was, I think with this particular Arkansas team, it's too early to tell, right? If they're going to be a good road team, if they're going to get up more for a road game than for a home game, if it's going to be more even. You know, some teams do tend to play better on the road. You know, it's maybe there's some more motivation there. Maybe they're, you know. But this will be, I mean, this is our opportunity to start to see a little bit with this year's Arkansas team. We just won't really know. Some people have pointed out that when they went on the road to BYU in 2022, you know, that was a good showing for them. So, I mean, this will be a very telling game for them. It's not going to be an easy road environment by any stretch. I mean, it's a sellout. They're doing like a stripe out, which, I mean, stuff like that. Who knows how much that really matters. But it is a sold out crowd of, what, 55,000 or so?
53.
Yeah. And Coach Pittman talked about, I've never been to Boone Pickens Stadium, but something he pointed out yesterday that I didn't realize is that the sidelines are really narrow.
Oh, yeah.
And so fans are like on top of you.
Infamously narrow.
So, which I didn't know. But yeah, so, I mean, that'll be something to watch. It's something that they're prepared for, they're talking about. And so I think this game will start to answer that question about this year's team.
And the people who sit there, they've got these, I don't know what you call them, maybe paddles, slapsticks, and they just bang them on the wall the entire game.
Yeah.
And it makes it adds a significant noise. It's not as annoying as, say, the cowbells are going to be in Starkville in a few weeks, but it does. Hey, I mentioned it earlier. I think Arkansas, they have, for the most part, played pretty well on the road under Sam Pittman. Don't always win them, but they've been a pretty tough road team. Blake?
Question number two from Hog Doctor. What percentage of the offense did Arkansas show against UAPB?
I don't have an exact percentage, but I think it was a low amount. I mean, it looked to me like it was a total vanilla ice cream game plan. You know, I mean, they went play action on the first play of the game, tried to hit a deep pass. I mean, but for the most part, Christina, they turned around and they handed the ball off or, you know, it was just kind of short passes. I think that they held back a lot because they knew they could beat UAPB pretty much, you know, one-dimensionally. And that's kind of what they did. I mean, Green threw for, what, a couple hundred yards, a couple of touchdowns. But for the most part, it was just turn around, run the ball, some toss sweeps, some power plays. And I think they're saving, you know, the full playbook for this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, you have to, right? Like, you know, there's no sense pulling out all the stops against UAPB, you know? So I think this will be an exciting weekend. I'm very excited about this game. I'm really looking forward to watching this game. But I think this is a large part of why. Like, we'll actually start to see a little bit more of the Bobby Petrino offense that we've been looking forward to seeing or that people have been kind of hyping up. So I think this will be a big test for that. I think there's some opportunity for them to exploit some weaknesses in the Oklahoma State defense. And so this will be when we start to see a little bit more of that. So yeah, like you said, no exact percentage from our, you know, we're not Bobby Petrino, but I think it probably wasn't a lot. Like, I don't feel like we've seen anything yet.
I'd guess 16%. That's how much of the playbook
you
saw. I think Oklahoma State probably had to throw more of its playbook out there to beat a better team in week one.
Yeah, definitely. South Dakota State, you know, the two-time FCS national champions, they're no, you know, it's like we talked about last week, UAPB is an FCS team. It's also an FCS team that's been down and not a historically good program. South Dakota State, very good. So very different, both FCS games, very different FCS games for Arkansas and Oklahoma State.
All right, Blake.
Question number three from Crime Analyst. Oklahoma State appears to have 7 offensive linemen returning from last year's roster, 5 of whom have 4-plus years playing experience. They also have a 7th-year quarterback and a Doak Walker-winning running back. Is there anywhere on paper or in film where the Razorback defense might have an edge against the Oklahoma State offense?
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the most experienced teams in college football. That's been kind of their calling card all offseason. People are talking about this offensive line as one of the best in the country because of that experience. They've all played a lot, and they've all played together a lot. These guys are all returning starters that had, like, at least 750 snaps for Oklahoma State last season. So these are guys that have done it before. And I think, you know, with Alan Bowman, the quarterback, he is a 7th-year guy. He had some problems last season. I mean, there were some accuracy issues, some interceptions. I think it was 14 interceptions, 15 touchdowns. In their losses, he had interception problems, and that was a common theme in all of their losses. And so I think if Arkansas can manage to pressure him, and if they can rattle him a little bit, they could have a good opportunity. Arkansas, you know, had a good amount of interceptions last season. A lot of those guys in the secondary are back. If this defensive line can get some over on the offensive line, I think they have a good shot. The question will be if they can do that. And defensive line is one of Arkansas's strengths on defense, so I do think that there's a chance there. It's just, it's such a big test for both sides of the ball.
Yeah, I think it's too early to say, quite honestly. You know, I've harped on this. I just think that so much of what we think about teams is based on last year. And it's just too early to say how all the transfers, number one, are going to play together, how they're going to adapt to their new offense or their new defense or whatever the case may be. If you're a 7th-year quarterback, there's probably a reason you're a 7th-year quarterback and you're not onto the NFL right now. So maybe Arkansas has an advantage at quarterback, but we've got to see Taylen Green, you know, continue to prove it. He proved it against a really bad team in game one that, you know, he can run this offense. How's he do that against better athletes in a hostile environment? Those things this weekend. Hey, based on last year, I'd give Arkansas the advantage for sure at tight end, Luke has, and he's going back to his home area on Saturday from Bixby, about an hour away from Stillwater. Blake?
Question number 4 from Danny. Who among the new players has been the most surprising performer thus far, and why?
Boy, I don't know. I mean, that's we're only a game in against UAPB. Maybe Green. I don't know that I expected – I don't know what I expected from him in game one, but I would say that he at least surpassed, you know, whatever modest expectations I had in that game.
Yeah, it's so hard with that week one because it's like, what do you – you know, you try not to read too much into a performance against UAPB. The guy
How about
that
Bobby Petrino? Can we call him a newcomer? Yeah. I mean, he went 10 for 10.
Yeah. He's technically
Bobby Petrino,
not
that's
that
my
new,
pick.
You know?
Yeah, he's a newcomer.
Yeah. The guy I wrote about was Rodney Hill, the running back, just because I was surprised to see him in the position he was in as the number 2 running back. And we knew Rashad DeBinion was a little bit banged up. He'd been the guy that was, you know, kind of the or with Jaquinnon Jackson, except on the depth chart. He was not. He's now number 4 on the depth chart. And somebody asked Pittman the other day, is that just because of the injury, or is that basically effectively asked, like, is he really your number 4 running back? And Pittman said, we like Rodney Hill as number 2, and when Rashad is healthy, he will have the chance to move up the depth chart, basically. So they feel good about Rodney Hill. I think they feel good about kind of the variety they have in the running back room. He, a lot of running backs got involved in that game, obviously. It was a huge running day for them. So I'll be interested to see how much they use him and what he does against Oklahoma State. So that's another thing that I'm watching for sure. But I would say he was probably a big surprise to me just because I didn't expect to see him in that position.
Bobby Petrino, top newcomer. Blake?
Question number 5 from Tucker. After watching this weekend's other games, do you feel Arkansas has enough size, strength, speed, and experience in the 2-deep on both sides of the ball to keep up with who they have to play this year?
I don't know about the 2-deep because, again, we've talked about the depth, and that depth just hasn't been tested yet. They played against UAPB and they did what they were supposed to do. You know, if they've got players that start to go down a lot this year, I don't know that they've got the depth to compete against other teams. But like I said yesterday, I do feel better, I think, about the schedule that Arkansas plays, not necessarily based on what Arkansas did, and I may change my tune on this after we see them in Stillwater on Saturday. I mean, but Texas A&M, they've got a quarterback that does not look like he fits the Colin Klein offense, Wegman. I liked him under Petrino last year and Fisher. I don't think he fits this Colin Klein kind of, you know, power cat offense. LSU – maybe USC is a lot better than they have been, but traditionally Lincoln Riley's teams don't play defense, and they looked really good defensively against LSU, which makes me think that maybe LSU didn't look good offensively. So I don't know. I don't know about the depth part, but I do think that at least for right now, I feel better about Arkansas's schedule than I did a week or so ago.
Yeah, I mean, after some of those week one performances with the other teams on their schedule, there's definitely a little bit more optimism, I would say. But yeah, depth, I mean, it really depends on the position. Like, I'm still a little iffy on the receiver depth. I think they do have some good speed there. Depth-wise, I'm not sure. Defensive tackle depth is still a really big concern. So it's mm-hmm. it's really position by position. You know, you mentioned tight end is one of their best spots. I would say linebacker they feel a lot better about. So it kind of just it's position by position, and I think we'll start to see a little bit more as these guys get more work about what they're going to be able to do once the league schedule starts.
Christina, thank you for being here. When we come back, we're going to have Steve Ditmore, a sport management professor from the University of North Florida. We'll talk to him about this DirecTV Disney dispute and get his insights on a carriage dispute. He spent a lot of time looking into not just this dispute, but disputes in the past and writing research on this issue. So we're looking forward to talking with Steve. Be back in just a moment after another word from our sponsors.
Taste, sip, sample, and discover the very best restaurants and chefs Northwest Arkansas has to offer at the Bite Experience at the LPGA, a unique culinary experience on site at the Northwest Arkansas Championship. Tickets are available Friday, September 27th through Sunday, September 29th, offering access to the best golf viewing and food and beverage samples from over 30 local restaurants. You don't want to miss this. Tickets are available for $45 a day. Get yours before they sell out at BiteNWA.com.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
And welcome back. I want to tell you about Bentonville Glass, serving its community since 1971. Bentonville Glass is committed, professional, and versatile. If you're looking for a quality leader in Northwest Arkansas or looking for skilled craftsmanship, choose Bentonville Glass for all your glass market needs and the highest quality products. You can come by and see them at 507 South Main in Bentonville or online at bentonvilleglass.com. A good friend of mine, Steve Ditmore, is joining us now. He is the dean for the College of Education and Human Services at the University of North Florida in Jacksonville, a former sport management professor at the U of A here in Fayetteville. I took several of your classes, Steve, and I've always enjoyed your take on kind of the peripheral of college sports, the things that we don't see on Saturdays. And one of the things that, you know, you were one of the first people I thought about when this DirecTV Disney dispute kind of blew up over the weekend, because you and I spent a lot of time talking in the past about these different carriage disputes and what goes into them. So we'll talk about Disney DirecTV here in just a moment, this dispute in particular. But tell people who maybe aren't quite as in tune with what's going on, what causes these carriage disputes, and why is it something that you think we're seeing at the start of football season every year?
Sure. Yeah, no, I appreciate it, Matt. So, you know, without getting into too many weeds on this, in 1992, the government passed the Telecommunications Act, which allowed for retransmission and rights fees that a cable provider, which I'll just use DirecTV, which is obviously a satellite company, but just talk to them about them as cable providers, provider to charge an amount commensurate with what the network wanted to charge for carriage of that network signal on the cable system. And typically that cost then gets passed on to the consumer with a little markup so that the cable company can make a profit. And so if we just use round numbers, if we say that Disney, which owns ESPN and a host of other networks, bundles all of its channels and say to DirecTV or to Comcast or whoever the cable provider is, we're going to charge you $10 per subscriber per sub to carry this. And then they sign a contract, an agreement, and then like all contracts and agreements, those things end and they come up for renegotiation. And Disney now says, we want to charge $12. And DirecTV and the cable operators, which are dealing with cord cutting and fewer consumers, says, no, we're not going to pay that. And so then Disney doesn't allow for that signal to be transmitted on their system because they're not being compensated for it. And so the network goes dark, which is what is going on right now with DirecTV and Disney. You mentioned about the fall. Well, clearly NFL programming and football in general are the most valuable live content, live programming that is available to consumers. And so for these agreements to come up at a time that those programs are being re-entering the marketplace, you know, as we begin college football season, we begin with pros this week, Monday Night Football on ESPN exclusively next Monday night. Those are things that consumers want to watch. Mm-hmm. And so you wind up with these two large corporations, DirecTV, Disney, negotiating over dollars that impact consumers, and consumers are left to make a decision about, do I stay with DirecTV? Do I switch to another alternative provider? Is there another alternative provider I can even choose?
Explain to people how bundling goes into this too, because, you know, a lot of people say, I just want ESPN. Well, if you're paying for ESPN, Disney is going to bundle a lot of other networks together. You're going to probably pay for ESPN too. Probably ESPNU, or maybe that's added on as a different sports tier. But there are a lot of non-sports networks that are added into this too. I mean, Disney and its portfolio, I'm looking at it right here, they own Lifetime, they own A&E, they own National Geographic, they own the History Channel, the Disney Channel, and you can just go on and on, FX. All of these channels that typically are part of, whether it be cable, satellite, streaming, it's going to be part of that you know, that package that you buy. And so even though you're just wanting to pay for ESPN, you're probably paying a pretty large amount for the whole Disney package.
Absolutely. And that's ESPN is going to be the hook that gets all those other channels onto your cable system. And you may never watch those. As a consumer, you may never watch any of those things, Lifetime, National Geographic, things like that. But they are available, and you are paying for them, whether you use them or not. And so the cable operator, so if you let's get back to the question of, I just want ESPN. That's coming. ESPN is building out a direct-to-consumer, DTC type of streaming platform that will allow you to just subscribe to ESPN. Now, that cost will go up. If a consumer is paying $10 a month right now to have ESPN as part of an overall bundle of things, because you're also paying for Disney and National Geographic, if all you really want is ESPN, that cost may go up to $35 to $40 a month. For a consumer, if that's really all you want, and you can drop DirecTV and your $75 a month fee there, and you're looking at, well, I'm going to pay $40 for ESPN, you're actually saving money, and you're not buying programming that you don't necessarily watch. You're not, you know, it's like you go to the grocery store and you buy a dozen eggs and you wind up throwing out five of them because you don't eat them. You know, it's, you only want these seven eggs and but you have to buy 12, right? So that's coming. And what I think is most unique about this particular dispute that's going on right now between DirecTV and Disney is that it comes on the heels of the court's decision to block the startup Venue streaming platform. So Venue was this consortium between Disney and ESPN, Warner Brothers, Discovery, and Fox, that would have allowed for those them to aggregate all of their sports-specific channels into a single streaming service that was going to be priced at around $45 a month, and it would have allowed you to get pretty much everything except NBC, which has its own streaming platform known as Peacock. But it would have given you ABC, it would have given you Disney and or ESPN, it would have given you TNT for basketball and some of these other distributors. And it was viewed as the bundle for sports fans, which Fubo TV challenged in court because they had tried to package these things, and we can get into a whole laundry list of economic and antitrust violation discussions at a later date. But if effectively Fubo challenged in court and got the courts to agree that venue could not proceed because it was anti-competitive.
And of course, that doesn't mean that venue is by the wayside yet. It just means that it's probably going to be appealed, and
yes,
you know, the courts will decide its future. You know, a lot of times, and you know this, having worked in PR, you carefully craft your statements, right? I don't know if you saw the DirecTV executive statement, though, on Disney. I mean, this did not look like it came from someone who was carefully crafting his words. It looked like someone who was just mad, and it came from a place of anger. We read it yesterday on our podcast, but the mic drop moment, he says, Disney's only magic is forcing prices to go up while simultaneously making its content disappear. It's a great line from the DirecTV exec. But it seems like, you know, you think about DirecTV. Last year they had about a three and a half month battle with Nexstar. And it took the NFL season coming along and people not getting their games on, you know, whether it be Fox in some markets, CBS and others, that it finally got agreed to. But it seems like DirecTV is willing to go to the mat a lot more than maybe some of the other providers are. And Disney obviously is got its heels, you know, dug in on its side. I mean, do you think this is something where the NFL season coming up this weekend can get this resolved quickly, or do you think it's something that might take a little while?
You know, that's a really good question. I think history tells us that these things get resolved at the 11th hour so that NFL programming isn't impacted for consumers. That's been the pattern. But I think this one's different because DirecTV, as you point out, they're having somewhat of an existential crisis here in that their business, as they have known it for the last 20, 25 years, is in jeopardy. Mm-hmm. They want to have these kind of like skinny bundles and more narrow focus packages that allow for consumers that all I want is news and politics, and so I get those bundles, or all I want is lifestyle, and so I get Food Network and HGTV and those other things there. They just want to have a sports-only bundle. But they don't own the content. And that's where if a Disney, which owns ESPN and owns the rights to broadcast content, whether it's Monday Night Football, whether it's the SEC, whether it's, you know, the U.S. Open Tennis Championships that are also going on right now, they own those rights. And if ESPN and Disney can figure out how to also own the delivery system, which right now is the only thing that DirecTV owns, is the delivery system. If they can control that market, there's not going to be a need for DirecTV. And so I do think that DirecTV is having this moment of trying to point out to the consumers and to regulators that, look, this is going to go the way of a somewhat anti-competitive behavior, that if ESPN is allowed to move forward with its own direct-to-consumer, and if they can package all of their programming, all of their channels, and the rights fees that they pay, I mean, they pay billions of dollars for these rights fees collectively. Yes, they need to recoup those costs, and so this is the way for them to do that. They don't need DirecTV. They don't need Xfinity. They don't need, you know, Spectrum or whatever the cable provider is to do that if they've got this other delivery system. And so I'm not surprised. I've listened to a couple of podcasts around this and read a few articles around this particular one. And it does feel a little different than the one last year at this time with Charter Communications, which owns Spectrum, and the same type of carriage dispute that they had with Disney.
And that one lasted for 12 days and it got resolved the day of the first Monday Night Football game of the season. The first Monday Night game this year is next week between the Jets and the 49ers. A lot of times when DirecTV in particular gets entangled in these different disputes, the first thing that you hear from a lot of people is, well, just dump DirecTV, go to Hulu. Go to Hulu, which is owned by Disney, by the way. Correct. Or go to YouTube TV or any of these other. but there's still 11 million plus subscribers to DirecTV in the United States. And one of the things that I think people probably don't think about is the lack of access to high-speed broadband internet in rural areas. And that's what keeps DirecTV afloat, especially in the South, which I think makes this one very interesting because DirecTV, I mean, you go get outside of Fayetteville or Little Rock or whatever, you know, larger city you're around. I went to a high school football game last Friday night, drove for about 30 miles off the interstate to get to the game that we were going to. There were satellites up on top of a lot of houses in those rural areas getting out there. And so where I'm getting at this is that it's not as easy as just dumping your satellite provider and going to a streaming provider, because we're not at a point yet where high-speed internet's available to stream games or shows or whatever it is you're wanting to watch and enjoy the type of quality that's coming back through your television.
No, 100% agree. You're absolutely right on that. It's a huge problem for rural customers that don't have that. And, you know, so much of our society these days, take television out of the equation, or streaming content out of the equation, so much of our society is predicated on the ability to connect to the internet and have access, whether it's education with online education, whether it's banking, telehealth visits, all of these things. I mean, there is a huge health disparity impact that not having access to high-speed internet can have in rural communities. The other segment of the population that this maybe adversely affects a little bit more than others would be the older adult population that might not be as technologically savvy to figure out, okay, I can get this, but I got to download an app and I got to log in and use my two-factor authentication to do this. And then I can stream it. And then maybe I can log into my smart TV and I go to the app and I connect the two things. Older adult populations that are used to being able to flip on their television and go to their channel and watch this on DirecTV, you know, though that's another part of the population that I think is could be left on the outside if this is a protracted type of disagreement.
We didn't talk about this beforehand, Steve, so I'm going to put you on the spot. The SEC is fully in bed with Disney. I mean, there is no SEC home events that are available on any other network than ESPN or ABC. Is it a good move for the SEC in light of what we've seen the Big Ten do by kind of spreading its seat around more in line with what the NFL has done?
Yeah, you are putting me on the spot on that one. I think it, given the changing dynamics of how content is delivered and the delivery systems, the streaming options that are now available, and the fact that the SEC geographic footprint now extends into other markets that it didn't extend into, say, a few months ago, that maybe the SEC would be well served to look at maybe spreading it around a little bit more like you talked about with the Big Ten and creating other packages. That said, one of the things that created the value for for the SEC when it went to market with these things was the exclusivity that it gave ESPN. So they really have to, you know, the commissioner's office, Greg Sankey and others, they really have to be in step with Disney as they make these decisions going forward, because they did kind of choose this dance partner. And even though the music might be changing, they got to figure out how to navigate that.
As Christina and I were talking about earlier, came across our desk not too long ago, that the DirecTV has actually written a letter to Greg Sankey appealing directly to him, which shows the power that sports have. One more for you, Steve, as we get out of here. NFL, you know, they're on Netflix now. They're on Amazon. College sports, they're the little brother, and they follow behind the NFL's lead. How long do you think it is before we're going to see college sports go out to these type of streaming services? Because it feels like it's inevitable. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I don't. That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I think those other ones have really grasped at what rights are coming up. You know, let me answer it a different way. The fact that MLS is exclusively on Apple Plus TV is an interesting business decision. And it is in the sense of saying, look, we know that ESPN is spending much more of its available resources on NFL, Major League Baseball, college athletics. There's less left over for us. So we're going to go somewhere where we can maximize that. And you kind of see this a little bit maybe with the WNBA, them going to Amazon Prime Video. I don't know in a consolidating market in college athletics if you're really going to have that. I mean, are you going to have the SEC or let's say the Big 12 all of a sudden say, you know what, we're going to take all of our rights fees and move them to Netflix?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're still playing teams that aren't, you know, that aren't in that ecosystem necessarily, right? Because they're still playing, if Texas plays Texas Tech, you got one SEC school and one non-SEC school that are competing there. So you've still got both rights things. You kind of see this a little bit already with Notre Dame. Notre Dame's home games are always on NBC or Peacock, but their away mm-hmm. games are on whatever host channel or, you know, host school's rights affiliation are mm-hmm. with. So I don't know. I think that is a stretch. Now, I will say that if you look outside of Division I college athletics, you are seeing a migration of sorts at the Division II level, Division III level, the Flow Sports and some of these other streaming platforms where their rights deals are being purchased or they're developing arrangements with an alternative provider. But it's a good question. I don't have a crystal ball to look into that.
I don't think anybody does, which makes all of this very interesting. And there's really no great answer to the problems that are facing both the providers and the content creators. Steve, great seeing you. You can read Steve's work at stevedittmore.com. You authored a book lately, Jim Gillen, the Forgotten Dodger. Looking forward to getting a copy of that and reading it, Steve. It's great to see you.
Thank you, Matt. Really appreciate you asking.
All right. And we appreciate you being with us. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow as we continue to preview Arkansas and Oklahoma State leading up to Saturday's game. Until then, hope you'll visit our website at wholehogsports.com, and we'll see you tomorrow on our podcast.